You are listening to the Pro Ecclesia podcast from the Truett Church Network. Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Pro Ecclesia. I'm your host, Jack Bodenhammer. Today, we are having a great conversation around faith, disability, and accessible congregational ministry, a subject matter that I think we're just beginning to scratch the surface of and think deeply about. We're joined today by one of the premier experts in the field, Dr. Eric Carter. Eric, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you, Jack. Thanks.
Yeah. So Dr. Eric Carter is Baylor University's Luther Sweet Endowed Chair in Disabilities. He also serves as the executive director of the Baylor Center for Developmental Disabilities, and just a leading voice. His research kind of runs in a couple of strands, and one of the ways is that he addresses the spiritual lives and flourishing with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and their families. And I think for the listener, we're going to use that term, I would assume, quite a bit today, intellectual and developmental disabilities. You'll hear us shorten it to IDD throughout the conversation. And so we're thinking about how they flourish in the great congregation, but also thinking about what it means to have this idea of inclusion and belonging for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And I love this piece of what you're doing, is this kind of reciprocal nature and lasting benefits about friendships and living in friendships and community together. And I think that's kind of the 36,000 feet view of your work, Eric, but maybe we would benefit a little bit from hearing your story. How did you come to this field of study? What prompted this, and kind of what who you are?
Yeah. Well, I'd love to share my story, and it sometimes sounds a bit unusual, but I want it to be more and more of an ordinary story for people, because I think the 18-year-old version of me would have been surprised that this was a path that I was going down, and that I was doing work in this area of really trying to help congregations embrace and love on and support those with disabilities and their families. Because I, like a lot of people, I kind of grew up in a world that didn't really include people with disabilities. At least it seemed that way. When I think back to my childhood, young people with Down syndrome or intellectual disability, young kids who were autistic, they were never really part of my classes that I attended in school. I don't remember a presence in the clubs I joined or the jobs I had. And that was probably true for many of the people who are listening as well. Now, that wasn't actually the case. That's just how it seemed, because of the ways we choose to gather in our schools and communities. It so often kept people with disabilities on the peripheries. But, you know, when I was 18 years old, a freshman in college, I spent a summer working up at a mountain camping program, and I ended up stumbling into some relationships with other 18 and 19-year-olds who happened to have an intellectual and developmental disability. And those encounters turned into friendships, and they were really transformative for me. So getting to meet Wayne and Margaret and John Ray, people who befriended me and loved on me and could have cared less about any of the things that I thought made me great, my accomplishments or my abilities, they just loved on me and embraced me. I found those relationships to be transformative. But through those friendships, I also heard the gospel in a way I'd never heard it. And so through their faith of sharing that with me in ways I'd never quite heard or experienced, a really deep love for the Lord, communicated sometimes through words, sometimes in other ways, that was the avenue through which I became a Christian. So having those kinds of encounters where I stumbled into relationships with people that so much of how we gather prevented those kinds of encounters, and then to discover the gifts of friendship and faith, that really, for me, was a sense of calling. And so that's what I would say has been the work I've been doing the last 25 years, of how do we open up communities in ways that people who so often don't encounter one another, who sometimes have all kinds of preconceived ideas about one another, have the chance to live and gather and worship and work in community with one another. So I came to Baylor in January with this goal of trying to catalyze work in this area all across our campus, to think about how we could really build out an interdisciplinary collaborative around faith and disability that would bring together the very best research and training and resource development and leadership that would really help equip churches to shine in this area of ministry. And so, again, as many of our stories, you never quite know what God has in mind for you, but how wonderful to be in a place like Baylor that I think sees this work as core to its mission, and a place like Truett that deeply wants to animate the movements of churches in this area of inclusive and accessible ministry.
Yeah, that's what a beautiful story of it's relationship. I mean, that's the gospel story, right? It is relationship. It's the gift to us that God gives us in if we have eyes to see, right? And man, already there's that idea there, I think, of eyes to see, ears to hear, and whatever separation walls we've built in our lives. And I think my story is much the same way as you described it growing up. Seeing some of those walls being torn down, even in our culture right now, is an incredible, exciting thing, phenomenon to happen. So let's jump in here on the ground floor. And just from your perspective, why is it, do you think, churches in particular struggle with the inclusion of children and adults with kind of these intellectual and developmental disabilities?
Yeah, Jack, I would say, to start with some of the things that are encouraging, more and more churches are stepping into the space and doing this well. And there really is growing recognition, I think, of the importance and the opportunity and the blessing that really comes from faithful ministry with and by those with disabilities. So that there's an encouragement component of it, but you're also right. It's still not on the radar of most congregations. It's still, as it is in the rest of our culture, still a hidden part or segment of many of our communities. So I think, you know, it requires to really think about how we widen that welcome and make sure that kids and adults who might participate in different ways and engage in different ways and experience the world in different ways, that requires us to be willing to revisit how and where we gather and how we preach and teach and the priorities that we establish so that truly every corner of our community can be part of the body. And that's, I think, partly where the challenge is that sometimes this is a group of kids or adults that requires all the more creativity and commitment and a willingness to do things a little bit differently so that they can be part of the community. So some of the barriers that I hear are we never thought about it. So just like as I shared in my own story of many years ago is still many people's stories now. So I think one of the struggle is it's just not on our radar. We're not attuned to it. And because our experiences elsewhere in the community aren't encountering the segment of our, you know, of our local city or county, we're not reminded that our church should be about this as well. I think sometimes there's a sense of we don't have the resources to do this.
Right.
I think, you know, you nailed it really well, Jack. At the end of the day, this is about relationships and welcoming one family at a time. And we do have the resources at that, but we think it requires new programs, new space, new costs. And sometimes we'll hear we just don't have the expertise for it. So a sense that, well, we'd love to do this, but we just don't know enough to do that well. And while there's some elements that might be true, I think most of what it requires to come alongside a family and ask good questions about how to support that kid and to rethink some small ways of doing Sunday school or worship, we do have that expertise. I would say there's also in your church, most people's churches, usually the expertise is already there. Your church has educators and special educators and service providers and others who have experience with disability. But often it's, we just don't know where to begin. We, you know, and I love that the question is no longer, should we do this, but how do we do this? And I think that's too, you know, where more and more we're finding there's others who can guide you in this area. But I think the last thing I would say is there is a sense of we worry we'll do this wrong or we'll do this poorly.
Yeah.
And there's a vulnerability in widening your welcome and welcoming people who've been the stranger. And you might do it wrong and you might do it poorly. But I think the posture that we're hearing from families is is your willingness to say you matter and you belong here and we'll do what we can to welcome you and we might mess it up is the right posture, and they will guide you along the way in doing it well. So those are some of the things I think that stand in the way. And I imagine, Jack, those are things that stand in the way of other corners of our community that we're not maybe thinking about as intentionally as we should.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think we're hinting at it already that the reality is we have these families in our congregations, and they're present in our lives, in our neighborhoods, in our schools, in our teams, in our bands, and everything. They're present, and yet probably largely unseen. Still unseen, even if visually they are there, still very much can feel like they're unseen. And as you mentioned about experts, I just think about parents are, yeah, are experts, man, that if we can show some energy towards wanting to do this, parents, I think, find the excitement. They know best, right? there's something to that. So if I'm in the congregation, or if I'm a minister, or a person that's just in the pew, and not just in the pew, but in the pew, what is this first step? Give us this idea of something. We're passionate about it. We know it's not 0 to 60, but what's that first kind of individual step we can take?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the starting point for a lot of this is just kind of intentional reflection. I mean, it really is beginning to notice who is already in your midst. And as you notice, you might be surprised that actually your church already has kids with a variety of disabilities or families impacted by disability. And so often who's already present and part of our congregation, whether we see them every week or they're on the peripheries and staying home, and begin to think about what are we doing well right now that supports their involvement and their belonging, or are there some things we could do a little bit different that makes that trip into church and from the car into the children's area a little bit more seamless for that family, or that enables them in some way to participate more fully. So I think that's the starting point before thinking about how do we address the needs and welcome well everyone in our city. There's already people right there that might have disabilities that are visible or hidden in a sense. So I think that's one part of it. And then it becomes asking good questions. You know, what could we do? Ask those families, what could we do to make Sunday the best day of the week for your child? Mm. And listen to what they tell you. They will guide you. They will have all kinds of ideas often. And then begin to think about what are some of those things that we can put in place for those kids one at a time. The other thing, you know, this reflection process can be a bit broader. You might think about how could we get 3 or 4 people in our church, maybe a parent of a child with disability, maybe someone who works as a teacher in a school or someone who happens to work in some sort of healthcare field, and a few other members of a church who represent the different ministries, and say, let's spend some time kind of navigating our space and thinking about our programs and noticing what might be barriers to people's participation or things that might stand in the way, and then begin to prioritize just a couple of those as next steps. It might be the architecture, that there's places people can't get in. It's probably more about, well, we just haven't really thought about the support someone would need to be in our Sunday school class or in the youth program or to serve in the choir. But I think that's a good element of being intentionally reflecting on it and then inviting the perspectives of families and people with disabilities to help you notice what you wouldn't otherwise notice. And I think that's where having the vantage point of kind of the eye of the stranger on your community is really helpful. You know, we tend to think our wherever we go to church is very welcoming and accessible. Otherwise, we wouldn't be there.
Right.
But we're not seeing it from the lens of the person who struggles to ever get there or to be part of it. And so if you don't know of people with disabilities in your midst, to invite some representatives of organizations in the disability community. And then I think a third sort of thing to think about is to think about these things that we call universal design and responsive design. And I know those are kind of technical sounding words, but what I mean by universal design is to think about what are some changes that we could make that would actually benefit people with disabilities, but actually benefit lots of people in our congregation. And so you think about that, like the curb cuts that we put in. Those were, you know, certainly benefit people with disabilities, but they benefit anyone pushing anything, any parent with strollers, the same with automatic doors. So it's a little bit of thinking together of what are some things we could do to adapt our services in ways that actually just make it easier for people with disabilities part, but actually might give more flexibility for anyone. That's that idea of universal design. And the flip side of that is just to think about responsive design is there might be some things that we do for one person, for John or for Aaron or for Sam, who's been a member of our congregation for 50 years and now has disability because of aging or dementia. And so it's that combination of thinking about who might come in the doors, but who's already here and how can we make those kinds of changes. So those are some starting points. Again, you don't have to always have expertise. It's about noticing, about asking good questions, about inviting people's input. And most of what you're going to hear is probably going to focus on the relational component rather than on we should start a new program or begin a new ministry. And I think that's gets at some of the barriers I talked about earlier, that we don't know if we want to step into this because we don't want to start something new. We don't think we have the resources. We don't have the staff or volunteers. Really, that one person at a time approach helps sort of cut through a lot of those reluctance and hesitation.
Yeah. Yeah. I love what you said there, because I think there's a tendency for any of us to become nose blind, so to speak, of our place, right? Like, we don't notice that our place smells like an old library anymore after we get there, right? And it helps sometimes have that new person come in and say, hey, have you noticed this? And once it's said, it helps to build that. And having someone come alongside you in this process with those eyes to see things that you can't see, because you're blind to your own space and you know, it can open up so many doors of just realization.
Yeah.
Because we grow comfortable with our places and we sometimes fail to see just the avenues, the easy avenues, right? These are probably some of the lowest hanging fruits. It's just by listening to people that could point out very obvious things that we don't see. In and around our buildings, in our programs, in our people, in our approach, all those aspects of it that we just are blind to sometimes. So you touched on it just then. Mm-hmm. I want to circle back to this idea, because I do think as I'm visiting with folks, that at any point in time, there's 1,000 things to do, right? And if you ask a pastor or minister, you know, how much time in your day do you have to think about something new? Varying answers will come across, and probably none of them are just bored, right? And so how do we help ministers or pastors or even churches that are feeling that they're at a dead sprint all the time right now, and this symbolizes for them some sort of interruption, some sort of new thing, even if we're not talking about programs, even just the shift of having the conversations around the subject? How do we encourage them to in a world that demands every piece of them to make this a kind of priority for the work that's being done in a congregation?
Well, I think part of it is not thinking about it as one more thing, but actually as a way of doing better all the other things you're already committed to. And I mean it in this sense. And certainly this is a broader perspective than just intellectual and developmental disability. But, you know, as I mentioned before, people with disabilities are already part of your congregation. And we are called as the church to love and embrace and stick with and support every member of the body without asterisk, without exception. So this is not another group to welcome. This is the group that's already gathered. If you have children's ministry, if you have youth ministry, if you have adult ministry or senior ministry, this is part of that ministry, because 1 in 7 of those kids has disabilities. 1 in 5 of your adults in your congregation has some type of disability. And if you have a congregation that has people who are aging, half of all people over 65, have some kind of impairment. So we're not in this sense saying, let's add one more thing, but let's think about how we support well people in the ministries that we already offer. We don't want a children's ministry that ends up inadvertently leading some families away. And I didn't share the numbers, but 1 in 3 families leaves their church because their child with disabilities wasn't welcomed.
Wow.
And so that's a pretty powerful thing. So you're really thinking about how do we already really strengthen the ministries that we have, and just think about how we make them more acceptable, more hospitable, more supportive. And I think, as we might come back to, that kind of effort towards accessibility and hospitality ends up benefiting lots of other kids, lots of other youth, lots of other adults. I mean, the fact that we put words on the screen, or that we have things electronically, or that we are able to look at our Bibles in print form and accessible form, and all of these things are examples of just making sure that whoever's gathered can participate. So there's an element of that, but I think the other part is Jesus gives priority to what we're suggesting here. And so, you know, it's actually stronger than that. The call on churches to be about the pursuit and the inviting and the receiving of the disability community is evident all throughout scriptures. We are supposed to invite the uninvited, and we're supposed to be lavish in our hospitality and to love beyond our usual circles. That was the way of Jesus, who took excluded people and said, you are indispensable and integral and valued and needed. And so when I read the Gospels, I just see story after story of Jesus spending time with people with disabilities, of challenging all of our preconceived ideas about what's important and who matters, and restoring people back into community. So I think it's we're talking about people in our midst. We're talking about a segment of our community that Jesus loved dearly and asked us to invite and seek out. And then I think about that reciprocity piece. I think about what I missed out on for all those years until I was 18, when I never got to experience the friendship of people with Down syndrome, and I never got to hear and experience their faith in a way. And so I think there's an element of we're missing out on flourishing together when a very large segment of the body is missing. So those are parts of it. I think that we really, the more we can help congregations think about this as not a thing that other churches should do if they have time, but a thing that we're all called to do with whoever is in our midst, and recognizing that any point, any one of us can enter into that disability community through accident, through illness, through birth, through whatever it be, it starts to be about not about them, but about something we are doing for us collectively.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think it's so sensible to say, if we're creating a place that is more hospitable, it will have an effect greater than an aimed ministry or a program that our church might catch that, you know, in many of our churches, we're actually really good at hospitality, right? We love gathering. We love, my children have any number of sets of grandparents throughout the church that just, you know, dote on them to a point of pain, right? And you say, yeah, they're going to spoil these guys. But so this is something I do think we understand as a church about hospitality, about loving people. And this is just trying to draw, I think, which, if I'm hearing you correctly, is just drawing a little intentionality or a little bit of eyes wide open and engaging in conversation to grow in something that we're already probably pretty committed to.
Right. And I think just to punctuate that point, you know, I'm making up a number, but, you know, 70% of this is hospitality. Families want that hospitality that we would give to anyone, but we often don't do for those impacted by disability or families because we're worried we'll do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing, or we feel uncomfortable or uncertain, and that leads to this kind of avoidance. So we're really saying, do the things we already know how to do that make anyone feel welcomed and experience belonging. And then there is some other things to layer on top of that. But there are people who can guide you in that, including the families and individuals themselves. And that really is, that's actually a really good example of the universal design of hospitality and the responsive design of the additional supports, because we're asking good questions about how we support you in this particular place.
Yeah. You hit something there. I think it's really important to talk about too, is often lost in this conversation is families, caregivers, whether that's, you know, parents or grandparents or siblings and everybody that can be involved in our families with those with disabilities. How do we, you know, obviously we're thinking about hospitality and those sort of things, but where does your work intersect with that kind of population, and how does that play out in the church?
Yeah, it's interesting. The last census that we had found that one in three households, so one in three, has at least one family member who's impacted by disability. And again, it's in the broadest sense of what that might be. And so we're thinking, just like you said, this is thinking also about siblings and grandparents and other caregivers. And so, you know, just the way we come alongside any of those individuals as we think about ministering to and with families, we want to make sure we're doing those things for families who are experiencing disability. And one of the things that our research really reminds us of that we ought to really know is how important the religious beliefs and faith community connections are for families impacted by disability, the way it helps them cope with stressors and challenges, the way it helps bring understanding of this experience of disability, the way their faith brings purpose and direction and a source of strength to meet challenges, and even helps inform the kinds of decisions they make as they advocate for their children. Their family's faith is so important. But there's also, our faith communities can be such an important source of practical support for these families. Respite, financial assistance, pastoral counseling, encouragement, relationships, people who just come in and love on them and nurture them. But also that there's a reciprocity in that too, that families need the opportunities to serve others and to minister to others. So I think, you know, when we think about what churches can do, as we think about the whole family unit, definitely support their family members well, their kids, their siblings well, so that worship and Sunday school can be a time of renewal for those families. That might be their one period of break for the entire week. And so our capacity to support their kids enables them to worship as a family, to connect with others, to develop relationships over coffee or be part of a small group. But the other part we don't want to forget about is probably the most impactful thing we can do for these families is to think between Sundays. We so often think about 3 hours on a Sunday morning, but think about how do you come alongside these families Monday through Saturday or whatever, you know, between the benediction and you know, and the welcome the next week. And that might be thinking about, some families might really be craving some sort of respite, whether that's informal or formal, a chance to, you know, watch their kids for a few hours so they can go shopping or go to an appointment or take a nap or go out on a date, whatever it might be, or to be part of a small group. One of the churches that I got to know up in Wisconsin, for example, one of the biggest gifts they did to families of kids with this developmental disabilities is once a year they would, on that family's anniversary, is they would pay for a hotel room or a bed and breakfast somewhere, and they'd watch their kids, and they'd send that couple out for a night. And it was the one date a year that family had. That didn't require any expertise on the church's part,
right,
but they recognized the need for care and love on these families. Mm-hmm. And I think the other part, we're seeing some churches just being really intentional about the social connections for families, helping support them to be part of a small group or a parent support group or a Bible study that connects those families as well. So again, the posture here is to think about all 7 days of the week, but to ask families, what could we do to come alongside you as you're navigating the challenge of raising a child, period? but also a child who happens to experience disability. How can we help you flourish? How can we love on your other kids? How can we address practical needs? And let the families tell you what would be most meaningful for them. And I'll tell you, 9 times out of 10, what they name is so ordinary, so simple, but they're never asked. And and so I think that's the right posture.
Wow. Yeah, that's powerful. I think about, we've spent a lot of this conversation really centered on kids and families, and I think that's a great aspect. But I would imagine also, though, there's a great challenge for the adult with disabilities coming to a church for the first time or visiting and finding a place of integration and hope and living that out. And as I listen to you talk about reciprocity, one of the most beautiful pictures I have ever witnessed in a church was empowering individuals with disabilities to lead worship.
Yeah.
And it was choir, or it was there was when I was a member at Yates Baptist Church in North Carolina, they had a handbell choir, and it was just a wonderful reminder that everybody has these gifts that can come and bring them at to the church and worship and lead worship and teach us there is some challenge there, right? To integrate that into our practice. And so I don't know what the question is there, but I just am so mindful of the care for families is so necessary. But we also will have people enter our doors that are adults and want to be known and loved and cared for.
Yeah.
And often where do we find roads to having those conversations with adults?
Right. Well, I mean, you're right. That what you just shared reminds me so much of the portrait of 1 Corinthians, you know, and the translation really of just every part of the body needing every other part of the body, the parts we see, the parts we don't, right?
Yeah.
And there is a reciprocity to that, and remembering that every person is an image bearer and gifted and has gifts that need to be received as well. And that's in no way diminished simply because someone has a disability of whatever kind. We may have to be more intentional about making sure we're calling out and nurturing those gifts. But to find, I mean, to me, a healthy church that cannot find a place for someone's gifts, well, that's not a healthy church, I should say. And so. Right. So we're asking this question as we step into relationship with individuals, we come to know what those gifts are. And then we're looking for places to connect those to opportunities to serve and minister to others. It's why we talk about this not as merely ministry to people with disabilities. It's ministry with and by people with disabilities. It's ministry with and by people. And so you're quite right. When you're a congregation that says, we have a place for you and your friendship and for your gifts. And in fact, if you're not here, it would not be the same without you. That's says something theological, but that's the kind of place we all want to be part of.
Yeah.
And yet that is not the kinds of posture that too often our churches think about. We can do some good things for people with developmental disabilities. We can serve those with developmental disabilities in the community. But rarely are they thinking we need to be served by and ministered by. So I think you're quite right in reminding us of that. That's how God designed the body.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So, you know, I am aware, believe it or not, it's come across the Baylor lines that you and Dr. Angela Reed here at Truett Seminary have been awarded this $1.25 million grant. And so to help churches with this, right, and among other things, of course, but talk to us a little bit about what you hope to achieve through this grant and where those might in your work might intersect with listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. We are so excited about this, Jack. This is why I came to Baylor, because this is so, one, not only aligns with the commitments of Baylor, but the opportunities to do this work across disciplines and to connect all of the wonderful parts of Baylor. I'm so excited. I get to work with Angel the Reed and Gaynor Yancey,
yes,
who's also part of Truett and the School of Social Work. But we have this five-year project. Our goal is to equip churches to pursue and embrace youth and young adults with disabilities and also who have mental health challenges in ways that really lead to spiritual growth and belonging and flourishing through accessible Christian practices. So the overall approach is that we want to come alongside cohorts of churches to learn together about what are some of the needs in their midst and the opportunities to learn from disability organizations and people with disabilities and their families about ways that churches might step forward faithfully in this area. We want to learn with them about how we reflect on barriers to meaningful participation and to think about their theological beliefs and practices. And through that work to be work towards becoming more accessible and inviting in the ways we gather. So it's a chance to learn with churches that want to explore deeply what this looks like in their particular context, to explore old and new Christian practices. And from that, the learning that we'll do with those churches to be able to create resources and training for many, many other churches around Central Texas, throughout the state, and around the country. So for this is an opportunity to say, how do we live out what we say we believe to be true about the body of Christ, and to explore how we can create some resources and practices and kind of leadership training that invites other churches to step into this space. So for those of you who are listening, depending when this comes out, expect that over the next year or two, there'll be opportunities to apply to be part of that work and to join us in learning what it looks like to do this well.
That's great. What I'm hearing there is you don't want people just to flood your inbox.
Not yet. We will soon have more information, and it'll be pushed out through Truett Networks and Baylor Networks as well. But certainly if hearing this intrigues you, feel free to drop me a note, and we'll hold those as we're just getting launched and trying to figure out how to do this really, really well in ways that animate the church and equips it and supports it and encourages it.
Yeah, man, that is a trio there of just exciting people. You and Dr. Reed and Dr. Gaynor, Yancey, man, that's just so much fun. And we're looking forward to the work that's going to be done there and the resources that will be developed. And I know in my time serving as a pastor, so hungry for those kind of resources to come across our table, and the need is great, and so we're excited about the possibilities that will arise from that.
Yeah.
What might be kind of your final word of encouragement to our audience?
Well, I just convinced that all of your churches can be, and maybe already are, being enriched and enlivened by the presence and the gifts and the faith and friendship of those with disabilities and their families. I think the encouragement, here's a chance we get to model that portrait of the great banquet in Luke 14, mm-hmm. and a chance to live out that portrait of that beautiful body where every member matters, that Paul talks about. And so the encouragement is, we're called to this. You can do this, and you will benefit richly from this, because this is what it means to be a flourishing community, where every member matters, where every person belongs, and everyone is esteemed, everyone as fearfully and wonderfully made. And so I just want to encourage you to step forward in this space and know that there are people who will be animated around you and join you in this work. And we are eager along the way to equip you and support you through the work happening here at Baylor.
That's great. Dr. Carter, we're so grateful for your time with us, and just appreciate your words and your encouragement and the work that you're doing. Thank you for being here. And thank you guys for listening. And this has been Pro Ecclesia, part of the George W. Truett Theological Seminaries offering and podcast, and we look forward to having future conversations down the road. Thanks.